The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show on this Thursday night. I get tonight not only to give one of you 2,000 Rand, because I'm that kind of guy, because other people's money, hey, but you've also got to work for it. You've got to work for it in our fast track. But then later on, I give away a prize worth 300,000 Rand on The Money Show. And that is with Nedbank Business Ignite. They're meeting 12, 13, 14 meters away from where I am now. Ray White is hosting the event, and the Nedbank Business Ignite participants, and there are about 15 phenomenal small businesses competing for the big prize in Joburg. We handed out to Komati Foods on Tuesday night in Cape Town a similar prize, courtesy of Nedbank and Nedbank Business Ignite. And then we're doing it in Joburg tonight. And so we'll talk to the judges, we'll talk to Nedbank, we'll talk to the winner of a prize worth 300,000 Rand. This is life-changing stuff for a small business. And we can change the trajectory of the small business. And inside that 300,000 Rand is some coaching and some help to grow the business, and also some advertising, some airtime. And people respond well to advertising on this radio station. So, and then suddenly you sit with a problem, because now you can't service your customers, because you advertise, you tell people how great you are, people come, and what do I do now? And that's why it's a whole package of fabulousness. Also tonight, a person I know, I'm trying to keep it as vague as possible, and hopefully I don't dob them in it, because I've got all kinds of documents that they've provided to me. They've been in an RA, a retirement annuity, for 15 years, and religiously putting money away in this retirement annuity. And if I was to be unkind to this person, I would tell them that you should have paid closer attention to your retirement savings. But kind of like most people, they decide they're going to start, and they begin, and they started on the 1st of July 2004. The realization date, so it's an old style RA, is the 1st of June 2037. And this person is not a youngster anymore, but not an older person. An investment term of 32 years and 11 months. And it was put into a particular fund, and that fund has not done brilliantly over 15 years. In total, as best as I can see it, they've up about 50% over 15 years. And that's not an investment return that you want for your retirement. That's not the return. And they've paid huge fees. And the problem with this particular retirement annuity is, if they want to cancel because the performance is rubbish, they're expected to pay a cancellation fee, and a big one, tens of thousands of rand. And the broker who sold this particular product to this individual hasn't contacted them for at least 6 years, and every year is drawing a commission. So this person did the right thing. They went and laid the right complaints. The broker has offered them a deal, said, okay, how about I split the difference on the com with you, buddy? Misunderstanding. It's not. It's a disaster for this particular individual. So we're going to do that with Warren Ingram this evening, Pablo Fatidis with Small Business. So lots to come on tonight's Money Show. But coming up first, in the next 20 minutes or so, your chance to win 2,000 Rand in cash, courtesy of 702 Cape Talk and Altron, there when it matters. And your fast fact question this evening is marvelous. Which country wants to force its banks to dish out loans? There is a country, and it said to its banks, you better start lending money, which is an interesting idea. And I hope our politicians don't hear this particular discussion this evening, because they might think, oh, there's a good idea. Let's force the banks to hand out money, otherwise we take away banking licenses. I mean, what could possibly go wrong in that sort of environment, where banks, which are generally the best understanders, terrible word, of risk, they understand risk best, and they gauge. I mean, they're not in the business of losing money. But governments sometimes feel that banks should dole out loans. That's their job. Well, no, their job is to stay in business. One of the things they do is lend money to worthy causes and assets and things like that. So which is the country that is now practically forcing its banks to lend money? 31702-31567. That is coming up in about 20 minutes. The Fast Fact with Altron, there when it matters.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. At 92.7. And 106 FM.
If you hear that gigantic sucking sound, it's Eskom sucking money out of the fiscus. I mean, the debt burden at Eskom is growing on a daily basis. Eskom is in all kinds of trouble. The chief executive has resigned. It's in a shambles. But in Parliament today, it looks like we're close to seeing a deal in the way in which the money that will be granted to Eskom to bail it out again is going to be structured. And it's coming through a special appropriation bill in Parliament. Treasury has been working on the document, which needs to spell out, one, how Eskom is going to get future funding and what it will need to do, the compromises it will need to take, the restructuring it will need to do in order to secure that funding, the reforms it will have to undertake. All over the story is the Daily Maverick parliamentary correspondent Marianne Merton on the line to us from Cape Town. What is a special appropriation bill, Marianne?
Oh gosh, it's one of those terribly technical legal legislative things that says we need to do something special to get money for a special purpose. And in order to do that, because of our constitution and the laws that derive from the constitution, Parliament has a say in money bills. This is a money bill, and because it's special circumstances where a special amount needs to be taken for a special purpose, that's why Parliament is involved, and that's what a special appropriations bill is. Easiest example to explain, 2015 June, Parliament passed a special appropriations bill so that government could sell its stake in Vodacom to raise 23 billion rand for Eskom. That's what it's about.
Okay, so this is a way for Parliament to okay fresh funds for a struggling state-owned enterprise. But as you point out, this is not the first time they've done it for Eskom. Yeah. What they did back then was sell Vodacom shares. They sold an income-generating asset. Vodacom pays dividends. Government would have got those dividends. They sold those in order to, okay, last chance, Eskom, to give Eskom a bailout. And now they're going to do something very similar all over again. There's a saying, what's the first sign of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. I mean, this feels very similar.
Yes, it does. It will be a lot more complicated. But remember, in the meantime, between 2015 and literally February 2019, Eskom has been giving bailout, i.e. the 23 billion a year for at least 3 years. It turned out that it was planned and provisioned for the next decade that Finance Minister Tito Mboweni had announced in February. This special appropriations bill will be complex. The National Treasury DG, Finance DG, Dondo Mokgojane, did tell us yesterday that it will not be as simple, this is how much money you get. It will come with an explanatory paper to deal with certain issues, i.e. the broader energy sector reforms. What are Eskom's financing needs actually in a quantifiable manner, presumably? And also how to deal with the debt. One of the points that the DG made was, you know, some of Eskom debt is short-term bonds. Some of it is long-term bonds. Then there is short loan financing and all of these different arrangements totaling up about 450 billion rand right now as we speak. Need to be somehow unraveled and dealt with. And then the fourth point is, of course, the actual restructuring and, of course, also the engagement of the chief restructuring reorganization officer. Apparently, there is a pool of names. They are being considered, and that's where we are at. Finance DG said yesterday they're very reluctant to just table an appropriations bill without the whole package, so to speak, because Eskom is too large to be allowed to fail.
Yeah,
but it's also draining our economy on so many levels that you can't just say, here's another bailout.
Marianne Merton, thank you for summarising it so nicely for us, the parliamentary correspondent for Daily Maverick. Pinata Montalto in Cape Town, head of capital markets research at Intellidex, paying very close attention to what has been going on in Parliament. Peter, I mean, it does feel like throwing good money after bad, unfortunately. I hate those words, but is this time different?
Good evening. Well, it's been fascinating being here, poking around what's going on in ESCOM. It's been, I think, a very difficult story, really, to cover. It's why it's very helpful to have people like Mary in Parliament understanding the details of procedure. It comes down to procedure. It's a complicated process to pass a special appropriations bill. But also, I'm increasingly realizing that this entire thing is basically running off of egos and personalities. And so I think what we have seen and what the DG laid out very clearly in Parliament was the technocratic agreement that's now being reached in government. But really, I think there's still a huge gap around agreement amongst political principles in Cabinet on the way forward. And that's where they're going to really struggle, I think, actually to delineate this this explanatory appendix to an appropriation bill, which is basically a white paper. I think government still is really struggling to commit to some key issues around exactly how unbundling will work politically. And factors around that.
And government's insistence that, yes, there will be unbundling. It'll be broken up into three different pieces. That's all well and good. But the government's going to own all three pieces. There's not going to be privatisation of ESCOM. And you've got to say to yourself, at some point, surely you run out of enough money and you therefore have to, at some point, consider what you find so reprehensible. And that is possibly to get some pros in to come and help you run the place.
Well, exactly. And I think this is where people need to be much more skeptical about what is actually coming out of politicians as opposed to technocrats in government. And the key thing we're having to at the moment is for investors to really separate this out. Actually, what is reality and what is spin? And I think on this point of unbundling is crucial. I think there is total agreement on internal unbundling, as we call it, which is this idea of splitting ESCOM out into three state-owned entities. But there isn't political agreement at all on what I call external unbundling, which is basically where you would spin out a new Genco generation company that over time would be wound down towards zero. Basically as the private sector took over more generation capacity. There certainly isn't political agreement on that at all. And so I think we do need to be much more skeptical about political pronouncements and listen more to the technocrats.
And the risk of selling income-generating assets to fund cash-sucking liabilities, in the same way as Vodacom shares were sold in 2015 for the last appropriation bill, the money's going to have to come from somewhere, and some family silver may have to be sold in order to make this possible.
Exactly. Well, I think the key thing that investors are looking for in this explanatory appendix is going to be exactly how the thing is funded. Now, remember, even in a budget, actually, Treasury does not lay out how things are being funded in great detail. There's a table that will list the full amounts or the total amount of South African government bonds, say, to be issued in the year. But we actually need a lot more information here. We're technically potentially talking about an extra maybe 32 billion or so just for ESCOM in this fiscal year. That will have to be raised in the debt market. And on top of that, another 7 to 10 billion, which will come probably in a separate appropriation bill for other SOEs as well. And so a lot of detail is required. But ultimately, this is going to have to come from the debt market. There's virtually minimal scope, really, to adjust revenue or to cut expenditure elsewhere.
I mean, and again, ESCOM's got to be our biggest liability. I mean, other than ourselves, as South Africans, of course, who can't agree on a way forward, even though the options are glaringly obvious to anybody who pays attention to the options. And we're so busy fighting with ourselves amongst ourselves on ideology and who owns what and how it works and whose ego is stroked. And as you mentioned, the egos in the room are critical. This has got to be the biggest threat to the South African economy. If ESCOM breaks, South Africa breaks, and will take decades to fix.
Oh, exactly. But I think you have to somewhat differentiate between the operational issues and the financial issues. And that, you know, it's the sort of breaking ESCOM point is slightly overplayed. I think a harder line could be taken by markets, by banks as well, against ESCOM and against other SOEs. And I think there is a need for a much wider view of what goes on. If you are saying that ESCOM is too big to fail, then I think people should insist, for instance, that South African Airways enters into business rescue. I think those kinds of discussions are really needed, but they're not happening overall. But the key thing that markets are watching for to establish credibility around the Special Appropriations Bill is going to be conditionality. And this is really where I think government is really struggling. How can you actually pin ESCOM down on things that it will do to in return for this money? Because I think actually a delevered ESCOM is very dangerous. It could give more in wages. It could start doing renewables and crowd out the private sector. And so conditionality is very important.
Yeah, Peter Atamontalto, I mean, what's your assessment of where we are then in terms of the albatross that is Eskom?
Well, you're lucky, basically. This is happening in a huge fall in global real rates, a rally in the rand, as global real rates are falling. In a sense, this is the best possible global environment to be doing this. But no, some very, very difficult decisions are ultimately now required at political level. The politicians have to accept the technocratic agreements that have been made, have to commit things to paper, to publish a white paper, which was promised, let's not forget, at the start of the year, and still hasn't come out. And we really need to see the line in the sand, basically.
My thanks to Peter Attard-Montalto, the head of capital markets research at Intellidex, who's observing very, very closely, up firsthand and personally, all of the activity in Parliament around the mess that is Eskom and how the bailout is going to be structured and how the money is going to be made available, and also for explaining it to us, the Daily Maverick political reporter, Marianne Merton. In a moment, Kabelo Tsota from FNB Wealth and Investments. July the 4th public holiday in the United States means that we don't have U.S. markets to drive buying on the JSE, so it was fairly quiet. Comair came out with a profit warning, and the rand spent much of today better than 14 to the dollar. That in a moment.
The Money Show. The markets.
JSE was down a little on the day, about a third of 1%, 182 points down. We saw the JSE end the day at 57,829. All the main indices in the red today. Quite a lot of selling coming through on a small basis. The rand had a very good session, and we saw Comair come out with a profit warning. Kabelo Tsola is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investments. July 4th public holiday means basically the rest of the world's markets go in a sort of a semi-holiday too, because America, most powerful stock market in the world, it kind of drives everything else, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We struggled for direction today. We saw most indices, most countries across the world hovering across the unchanged line. The local market as well gave back after having started the morning quite buoyant after a good Asian session, or rather a mixed Asian session. But, yeah, we're expecting a bit more. Volumes very light still, 12 and a bit billion exchanging hands. But, yes, I think, you know, we certainly missing the U.S. now to give us some direction.
Yeah, but what is getting direction is the currency. And Peter Attard-Montalto just referring to it a moment ago, saying we're actually very lucky to be going through this Eskom appropriation bill business in a slowing global environment where interest rates around the world are coming down and where the rand is actually strengthening a bit. It does provide us with a little bit more of an opportunity not to break ourselves as we try to fix Eskom.
No, absolutely. It's a big positive for us, I think. That whole scenario of interest rates coming lower across Europe, across the US, is finding, or is rather channeling funds to emerging markets. We've seen some very strong emerging market currencies today, of which the rand was one of them. And yeah, a fairly good scenario for capital projects and for these type of restructurings. But yes, for the markets as well, and South African consumers, fairly good. I wish it could stay below 14, but yeah, we'll see.
we'll see. I mean, yeah, the rand was amazing today. I mean, we look at 17.66 to the pound, to 15.84 to the euro, to the dollar right now at 14.04, but did spend much of the day stronger than 14 to the US dollar. It's great for inflation. It's great because we import so much of what we consume and use. And it's really helpful on that particular front. With global interest rates coming under pressure, surely even our Reserve Bank at some point, it's got to think that maybe it's appropriate to cut interest rates. It was 3-2 in favor of keeping rates flat at the last MPC.
Yes.
It was 5-0, I think, at the MPC meeting before that to not cut rates. Mm-hmm. We're getting closer and closer to a point where rates will go down in South Africa, and in South Africans will have a little bit more money in our pockets.
And I think we need it. We, you know, we're sort of crawling quite slowly in terms of growth, and anything the Reserve Bank and other monetary policies, the fiscal side as well, can do to try and spur this economy on, we'll definitely take it. I think long term it should benefit the markets as well. You know, there's more disposable income. There's, you know, whether it's retail sales, vehicle sales, all of those different aspects of the economy are going to start ticking up if hopefully we could get a cut.
Oh, a couple of cuts, not just one. We don't want just one cut. We need several cuts. Governor, sir, we're asking nicely. And then profit warning today from Comair. Now, Comair has got this most amazing track record. I think it was founded in 1946 or thereabouts. It's never reported a loss. I mean, it's reported increases and declines in earnings over many years. Now it's saying that its profits are going to be at least 20% below where they were this time last year. And that's a factor of lots of different things. Sky-high oil prices, a currency which has made acquiring aeroplanes more expensive, and a slow economy, which means fewer and fewer people are flying on business and holidays and stuff. And nowadays you fly on planes and often you'll have an empty seat.
I think, Bruce, they mentioned that earnings were to be higher.
Earnings will be higher. I will have to have another look at the statement, because I've now been defaming, and if I have, I apologize to the new management team, of course, at Comair. But they did say that their earnings would be higher as a result of the payout that they're getting from SAA. SAA, of course, is paying that R1 billion over 3 years for price fixing 3 years ago. Further to our headline, earnings per share for the financial year are expected to be more than 20% higher. Did I say lower? I meant higher. You know what it's like. You know what it's like. Oh, no, hold on a second. Shareholders are further advised that EPS, excluding the award for financial year end, are expected to be 20% lower. So operationally, I was right.
Yes.
Don't make me doubt myself here, Carmelo. Don't make me doubt myself. So yes, they will make more because of the cash flows coming in from the SAA fines.
Yes.
But operationally, exclude that big fine income, they're going to be more than 20% down.
That's it.
I'm relieved I was right. Because times are tough in the airline industry.
No, it's very tough. And in fact, I think the last time we spoke, they had released this result update. And they did mention, look, you know, the increased oil price that we've seen and just a muted local economy, seeing them having to adjust to this new sort of dynamic. It's not as buoyant as one would have liked. And since then, we've seen the share price drop from about 625 when the announcement was made with regards to the fine. And now they're trading at about 385. But a lot of headwinds still.
You know what happens when you get on a plane and there are headwinds? Your happy return home gets delayed. Carmelo Tsula, thank you. He is portfolio manager with FNB Wealth and Investments. Earlier in today's Fast Fact, I asked you the question, which country is strong-arming its banks to dish out loans? Lesego at Papong in Brits. What is the answer,
please? Yes, Bruce. The answer is Nigeria.
Nigeria. Absolutely right, Lesego. 2,000 Rand South African on its way to you, courtesy of us at 702 Cape Talk, and of course those nice people at Altron there when it matters. And yeah, they try to boost economic growth in Nigeria. Nigeria is giving the banks a choice: lend more money or hand it over to the central bank and earn nothing on it. I mean, it's a madness. It really is. They're basically, the Nigerian Central Bank is holding a gun to the head of the banks and saying, effectively, if you don't lend money, we're going to take your banking license away. And bankers are good at many things. And most importantly, they're really good at taking risk and assessing risk. And sometimes they get it right. Most times they get it right. Otherwise, they'd go out of business. Sometimes they get it wrong, but they assess risk. They take chances by lending you and I money. And banks, they're saying, should use at least 60% of their deposits for loans by the end of September. This is going to cause havoc if it is pushed through. So well done to you, Lesego Bapong in Brits, who gets 2,000 Rand courtesy of Altron. There, when it matters, 2,000 Rand going through to Lesego. And tomorrow, on the Brutal Biz quiz, we double up and we give you 4,000 Rand if you're the whiz of the Brutal Biz quiz. But you've got to survive. And no. If you've appeared on The Money Show in the studio as a guest, you may not enter within 24 hours.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
Spontaneous applause, please. This is the Joburg edition of Nedbank Business Ignite, and you can smell the pheromones. And not in a sexy, like, happy way. This is fear. I love this. I love fear. Because what we've got is 15 great small businesses who've been competing over the last 3 weeks for the grand prize, which I've got the privilege this evening of handing out. I have not made any of the decisions. We've had an independent judging process, and Tsepo Pakati has been leading this process over the last 3 weeks, the founder of Kaelo Business Hub. We've got Alan Shannon here, the head of relationship banking sales at Nedbank. and we'll have the winner as well. And we will be going through that process in the next 15 minutes or so, and then talk to the winner this evening and change their lives, hopefully for the good. Because I suppose the risk here, Tsepo, is somebody wins a prize, and suddenly they get lots of publicity, and then they get some advertising airtime on the radio, and then all hell breaks loose, and they don't know what they're doing. That's where you come in, hopefully, to rescue them.
Absolutely, Bruce. It's on.
And it's on. You're on. Perfect. Don't worry. I've got you.
So one of the biggest concerns we had was that suddenly you have somebody who wins and their business is too small to scale and they fail. You know, so we don't want to set anybody up for failure.
Too small to scale, not big enough to fail. No, there's something in there. I'm working on it.
Yeah, so that was a concern that we needed to have businesses come through the competition that could cope with what happens after they are put on radio and you get all of that attention and advertising. So it was a very big concern that we have a business that's ready, that's reputable, that's got the right capacity, that can do what needs to happen for it to grow.
Did any one of these businesses suck?
Do you want the truth or the political answer?
Yes, I want the truth.
No, the truth is no business sucks. I mean, all these
businesses... I can handle the truth.
None of these businesses suck. I mean, these businesses are good. All the entrepreneurs are good. They've worked hard to build incredible businesses, and they contribute to this economy enormously, and they do very, very good work.
Did you have any favorites?
As an objective and unbiased human being... I see all these businesses like I see my kids. You know, I don't have favorites.
Everyone knows there's always a favorite.
Yeah.
Do you see, and I asked you this question in Cape Town on Tuesday, and you were very diplomatic there too, and you're going to be diplomatic here, but do you see the next Bidvest, the next Famous Brands, the next highly scalable, 20 years from now, we'll look at one of the participants, not necessarily the winner, but we'll look at the participants and we'll say, geez, we were part of this incredible business's early stage growth. And we like helped coach these guys. Look at them today. They now employ 500 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people, for goodness sake.
Absolutely. I mean, if you asked Brian Joffe 40 years ago if he would be where he is today, you'd probably get an answer that says, no, not really.
I don't think there's anybody more surprised at Bidvest's success than Brian Joffe. I mean, it's quite seriously. You said to him, did you ever think it would be this big?
And he says, no.
It's like We just kind of started and then built it, and then opportunities came, and so we grew. I mean, and he's quite nonplussed about the way in which Bidvest grew, yeah.
That's the beauty of business, because you start really small, relatively small, based on the resources that you have. And, you know, based on what we call the corridor principle, you've started something, other opportunities open up, and you expand and expand and expand. And in the end, you end up with something, you morph into something bigger than what you had originally anticipated. And that's what happens with big business. I don't think anybody sets out in the beginning to have a big business because you just don't know.
Yeah, I use a slide in some of the presentations that I do, and I show the garages where businesses started. Microsoft, in a garage with two nerds and a computer. Apple, in a garage. Walt Disney drew Mickey Mouse in 1928. A Steamboat Willie, in a garage. Harley Davidson, in a garage. The Wright brothers, who invented flying.
Absolutely.
Started fixing bicycles in a garage.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And who started in a garage?
Not me.
A couple. Nedbank didn't start in a garage, Alan Shannon. No, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
Alan Shannon is the head of relationship banking sales at Nedbank. Have you liked this process? Have you gone through this process before? Do you like it?
We've been through similar processes before. I think this year is obviously it's evolved into what we've got and what we've been through. This process has been a great process for us. It gets us exposed to some small businesses. And I think just in reference to one of your previous questions, Bruce, there's no doubt in my mind that there's a few businesses there that have massive potential. So the one thing there wasn't a shortage of was big ideas. I think there's a most certainly what was identified in each case is that there's some help needed to enable some of these big ideas.
Hopefully we'll be able to be part
of that process.
And what's so interesting is that for many people in this room, the idea of growth is exciting, it's thrilling, it's why they're in it. They want the growth, but it is a terrifying prospect. What happens if we become twice the size we are? We employ 3 people now. We employ 6 people now. We suddenly have to employ 12, 24. Suddenly I don't know everybody's name as I walk through the door. Alan, there you go. And that scares a lot of people who are starting out in the world of small business. But isn't that the magical bit?
It most certainly is. And I think that's, you know, it's the growth piece that I think as banks we are well geared to enable. Maybe take some of that fear away. But it's tremendously exciting.
Until it gets to the 30th of the month and you've got to pay them. Take the fear away till the 30th, and then you pay back. Pay back the money. The money's got to be paid back, otherwise the system doesn't work. My thanks to Alan Shannon, the head of relationship banking and sales at Nedbank. Tsepo Pakati is going to stay with us, the founder of Kaelo Business Hub. We've got, can I go through the finalists? I think I should go through the finalists. Yeah. And then we're going to announce the winner. It's very exciting. We've had La Scala coffee machines. We've had Health Aquatic Solutions. They manufacture brand and bottle water. A Microdot Safe. In South Africa, it's a very important business.
Absolutely.
Tracking devices in cars.
Very absolutely.
Critical business. We've had Ben & Co. Designs. Becky Ngema's Ben & Co., first black jewelry retailer in South Africa. We've had my favorite name. Can we give a prize for a name, for the best name of a small business?
Yeah, what's that?
The Rusty Dusty August. I mean, I don't know where rusty comes from, because in Joburg in August, you don't get any rust. It's hot and it's dry and it's windy and it's awful.
Absolutely. It just happens to be the nickname of Rustenburg. It's called Rusty Dusty.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
I've got other names for it, but yes. Reitland is here. The Socialite Group, Travel and Tours, Masana Trading Enterprise, The Salad Lab. There's a big focus on health.
Absolutely.
Health and wellness has been quite strong this year.
Watch out, McCain.
McCain, be careful. Those fries. Superstruct, Breuer Fisser. I like to say Breuer. And then Leary's Shoeshine Experience. If you've ever been through the airports, you've seen Leary's Shoeshine guys. The Kids Gym, Janet Mitchell's here. And the kids have lots of energy and want to join their parents, and they can't at the formal gym, so she's come up with a nice concept. 10th Street Media, Emergency Taxi, and Sinam Business Solutions. These are all of the businesses that have participated in Nedbank Business. In Nedbank Business Ignite. And now for the winner.
Drum roll.
In a moment.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. And 92.7. And 106 FM.
That's the sound of impatient clapping. Like, hurry up and answer the winner, because one of us wants to know so that we can mob them and beat them up. So before we announce the winner, because we've got to draw. Yes, we've got to draw it out as long as possible. Pain is good. So what we got is 15 potential contenders. Tsepo Pakati, what were you looking for in the winner?
So I think that the most important thing is a business that we can assist to scale, because it is of no use to anybody to have a business that is a winner that cannot scale. So we're looking for a business that we can scale. We're looking for the business that can contribute significantly to some of the problems that we experience in this country, like unemployment, etc.
Okay, so the Guptas would have won this year, because they because they scaled a lot. Scale slang in my youth for stealing. Okay, so business that can scale. Alan Shannon, the head of relationship banking and sales at Nedbank, what were you looking for? You were also one of the judges.
Yeah, so I think we wanted to know that, one, the company is actually making some money. So, you know, they're sustainable as it is.
Okay.
And I think the other thing was around their value proposition. So what makes them unique from the broader competition which they face on a day-to-day basis? Again, adding to the sustainability.
I think there are 15 people in the room who are thinking, it's me. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm really sorry that it can't be everybody. And to use last Tuesday's joke, because it was such a good joke, this isn't Montessori, not everyone's a winner. So the winner of Nedbank Business Ignite 2019 Johannesburg, it came down to one winner. And on the certificate is the signature of the station manager, Tabisile Mbete, and the head of client engagement at Nedbank, Alan Shannon, and Ben & Co. Designs! Becky Ngema. Where's Becky? Does Becky fainted? You always know the people who are going to win because they put themselves at the back of the room. Tsepo, why don't you hand it out? Because my hands are full. Tsepo, you hand it out. Becky, well done. His hands are full of stuff. Well done, Becky. Congratulations. You can go and get the certificate. We'll take photographs and Ruth will film you. Oh, Becky, look at him. He's shaking. It's lovely. Everybody else, don't hurt Becky. Becky's a nice man and he makes jewelry. Okay, Becky, well done to you. We're posing for photographs while we're live on air, which is nice. I like this. Becky, sit down. I need to talk to you. How are you feeling, Becky? Where's your microphone? Have you put it down? Yeah. Have you lost it?
I lost it in my hand.
You need to be. You make an octopus motif. Have you got any of your jewelry? Are you wearing any of your jewelry?
You can have a look over there.
Oh, can I have a look? Okay, there we go. Tsepo's going to open it up for me. He's going to show me some of your jewels. How are you feeling?
Shocked.
You knew you were going to win.
Not at all. I mean, it's a tough competition when we're. What is it called? When we're. Yeah, speed dating.
That's what it is.
There's a lot of bright ideas and unique ideas, you know?
You make manly, chunky jewelry with bling.
Hey? Thank you.
And how long have you been going for?
My journey is quite exciting.
We've got like 30 seconds. Don't tell me the whole journey, just the short
trip. Started in 2013 on my own. I worked from a garage, and then...
garage! Yes! Sorry. It's the reason he won. It's the reason.
And my flagship store, 2016.
And do you use precious metals and stones and things?
Yeah. So we specialize in...
And you carry them around in a paper bag?
Diamonds, gold, platinum, all the raw materials that you can find in South Africa.
And what are you hoping that Nedbank Business Ignite is going to bring you? I know you've only had 12 seconds to think about it, but you must have said, if I win, maybe we can do this.
Yeah. I want to be the next, can I name? I want to be the next Browns. I want to be the next American Swiss with chain stores.
No, you don't want to be American Swiss. Browns is good. American Swiss.
Yeah. I want to be the next Tiffany's, the next Blue Nile.
Sure.
Yeah.
You guys have got a job on your hands.
Yeah.
Was there consensus in the winner?
Yeah, there was. Yeah. I mean, listen, it was tough because there was a few other really, really compelling businesses which had us thinking, but I think this stood out. This is a creative retailer, manufacturer, who is
beneficiator of Absolutely. South Africa's raw materials.
Absolutely.
I mean, this stuff comes out of the ground of Africa.
Absolutely.
And you make it into pretty things.
Yeah.
We wish you luck and congratulations. Congratulations, Becky. I mean, it really is fabulous. Becky Ngema, Ben & Co. Design, the winner of the Nedbank Business Ignite Joburg Leg. There are some disappointed faces in the audience, but secretly they're very happy for you. Honestly, they are.
Thank you.
I hope everybody has gone through this process and has grown and has learned and has had a fabulous experience, and that you will continue to enter competitions because it sharpens you, it makes you better at what you do, and gets you out of the office. You guys don't treat yourselves enough. There's delicious food, there's gin, and there's some wine. And Uber travels around here a lot. So have a blast, everybody. Have a really good time. Well done to you, Becky. Becky Ngema is the Ben & Co. Design owner, the founder, and the guy who's beneficiating South African minerals and creating a great small business with a 300,000 rand value uplift, courtesy of us and courtesy of Nedbank. Thanks very much to Nedbank for Nedbank Business Ignite 2019.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to The Money Show. Good to have you with us. 7:07. How exciting was that? We gave away a package of benefits worth 300,000 rand in Nedbank Business Ignite and a really worthy winner and a really festive atmosphere. And it's always awful when you go to these awards things and you have to let, there has to be a winner. There has to be a single winner. And we had a single winner. He's happy. And the jewelry's gorgeous. It really is. I mean... It's my metrosexual side coming through, and I'm going, hey, man size, I like this. There's some interesting things, and he's got massive ambitions, and he's hungry for success, and he's beneficiating South African minerals, and he's got customers, and is growing. It's really good. On to a story of a different kind tonight, and it's big, and it's complicated, and it's detailed. So I've asked Warren Ingram to come in a little bit earlier tonight, just to take into consideration the multiple issues that we're going to deal with, and some of you may find yourselves in a similar position. We'll take your calls on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. It starts with an email from somebody I know. All right, so I must disclose that I know this person. I thought that there was universal appeal and an important information gathering session here because I think everybody can learn from it and benefit from it. I'm not going to name this person. I'm not going to name the financial advisor or the financial services company because we haven't gone through an extensive process of chatting to all of the people involved and saying, why was your investments performance so bad? Why have you charged such a high level of fees when you've actually been quite rubbish at managing this money? And why have you, financial advisor, not contacted this guy for the last 6 years? That's naughty. It comes in the form of an email from this particular person. He says, as discussed, here is my original complaint. I've attached all relevant documents, such as the scan policy document from 2004, the commission payouts, as well as the reply from the financial advisor. I've gone back in my email archive and only got back up to 2008, but I thought I was doing the right thing at the tender age of 23 by taking out an RA. Clearly, this hasn't performed very well at all. Please keep my name as well as the company brokers anonymous, blah, 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 and we can handle this more carefully. What do I do now with this investment? What do I do with an offer? And there is an offer on the table of a settlement between the financial advisor and this particular person. And to the financial advisor's credit, they keep very good files, and so they've got very detailed information on the complainant. Warren Ingram from Galileo Capital. I mean, take me back to the year of 2004 when things were in black and white. It was a darker time, an easier time. South Africa had some economic growth. South African economic growth was at about 4 or 5% at various points around that sort of time. We hadn't had the Eskom crisis yet. The global financial crisis hadn't happened. He has a 23-year-old young person who says, I need to save for my future, which big tick in their favor at 23 to start putting 1,050 Rand into an RA, which they agreed to grow at 10% per year. So now they're contributing 4,000 Rand a month to this retirement annuity product. I mean, their head was on their shoulders. They were doing the right thing at the tender age of 23.
Yeah, and you know, taking advantage of the tax benefits of the RA and hopefully the compound growth inside the RA that would also be tax free. So I think a lot of good ticks there. The downside, I guess, if we look at this, and I have to just say it wasn't me. I wasn't the guy. I'm not the advisor on this.
I would have named you if it had been.
So looking at it, the pros are long-term saving commitment. The second thing is a behavioral aspect here, which is, you know, you're starting to save $1,000 a month, but your salary should go up over time, you know, and your need to save more is going to go up over time. So let's commit now to future savings of more amounts of money, because psychologically it's actually easier for us to save more money tomorrow, to agree to save more money tomorrow than it is to save today. So I actually like that approach. I think that's a good thing. The things I don't like about this is that it was an old-fashioned insurance company RA. I mean, in 2004, lots and lots of unit trust companies offering RAs where you could pay-as-you-go fees, so not big upfront fees, and also no big contracts to lock you in where you would be pay a huge penalty if you decided to transfer or to stop contributing and the like. So pro, yes, committed a youngster to get saving and to increase that savings over time. Well done. Con, that, or not con in a negative, downside is in an insurance company and unfortunately then locking into quite an expensive contract.
Okay, what's also subsequently happened though, and I forget exactly when Vuyani Ngalwana was at the peak of his powers as the insurance ombud. He declared war on these kind of products. And he said, hold on a second, these upfront fees are ridiculous. The way in which these things are structured, the handcuffs that are then attached to you in an investment product are unacceptable. And it led to a revolution in retirement products in South Africa.
Yeah, and sort of limiting the maximum amount of penalties that could be levied on an RA, for example, if someone did decide to transfer it and move it out, still very high though. I think the maximum is still 25% of the value of the investment. So he, I mean, you're right. He certainly made a big dent in what was happening, but at the same time, you know, not necessarily big enough dent. And I think if I remember, Trevor Manuel was Minister of Finance at that time.
Yeah.
So if that, you know, that's the context of the time. It was a long time ago.
Okay, but here's the problem. You put money in, you take advice from a financial advisor, they then take a commission, an upfront commission on this particular fee, and we'll get into some of that detail in a moment. And they're making money out of you in year one and two, and then they charge you a percentage in perpetuity on this investment product because they gave you advice 15 years ago. All right. And you are now stuck in this particular RA product, and it's not performing particularly well because this person, to date, has invested, call it 400,000 Rand just for ease of calculation. They've put in 400,000 Rand over the last 15 years, starting at 1,000 Rand and now to about 4,000 Rand a month. So they put in a fair amount of money. The total value of this investment portfolio is 573,000 Rand, 508. So over 15 years, the total value of this portfolio is up only 50%. And you would have thought that because, you know, with this idea of compounding and growth over 15 years, that you would be making a lot more money. I mean, Julia starts investing, you know, at this, at the, around about this sorts of time. She started 2007.
Yeah.
And if memory serves, when we last spoke to her, she's put in 2 million and the portfolio was worth more than 4 million. So, I mean, she's more than doubled her money over that period of time. And this particular guy has made just 50%.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of maths here, a bit of to understand around this is, you know, in the early days he's putting in 1,000 rand, right, and then it goes up to 1,010, sure. and so I think the bulk of the 400,000 contribution is actually more later on. And,
okay,
and
no, fair
on.
Enough.
So there's a time value of money thing around this, but certainly the high costs of that insurance company RA, and then the discounting of the upfront commissions to the insurance agent and the insurance company itself taking a lot of the income or the expenses discounted right up front. That's the problem. That's why we don't like insurance company RAs, is for exactly the fee issue. So the fees become, I don't want to say good, because it's hard for me to say that, but they become lower as a proportion of the value of the whole thing the longer you go on an investment like this.
Okay, so this friend of mine then doesn't go to the financial advisor. He's very grumpy. He wakes up one day and he realizes he's not been paying attention. So bad person for not paying attention. He's not been looking after his money. He's being allowed, the debit order's gone off month after month after month, but he's done what I suspect most people do, and that's kind of just parked it. I'm taking care of myself for the future. I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
Larger and larger amounts of money coming out of my account every single month. It must be growing. And he ignores it.
Yeah, fire and forget.
And then wakes up one day and goes, hold on a second, but this is rubbish.
Yeah.
And he's cross. So he doesn't go to the financial advisor. He goes to the long-term insurance ombud and he files a complaint. And the financial advisor then writes an email to this particular person and says, it's certainly been a while. I'm sorry you felt the need to communicate with me via the ombud. So quite a... Grumpy. Yeah. I mean, you could have come to me directly, but there's a purpose for the ombud. And then goes and details the relationship between them. And we emailed you on this date. You didn't respond. We come back to you. You then agreed to do this. You didn't come to this meeting. You skipped this. You did this. Remembering that this is a 23-year-old man-child.
Yeah.
You know, not particularly responsible, but not responsive. And didn't really do all of the good things. And so when you start reading the letter from the broker, I nearly mentioned the name and I promise not to, from the broker, you start feeling sorry for the broker because you say, this is a naughty boy who has agreed to do something and he's not complying with the very basics of being an adult. And that is making sure that you communicate with your financial advisor, making sure that you respond when your advisor talks to you, you know, being responsive and adult about your investments. And so if one was to levy a criticism at my friend, one could say you were a naughty boy, especially in the early days.
Yeah, so I feel, again, I think there's two sides to this. One is that he took the big decision and the financial sacrifice on the monthly basis and then over long periods of time to save for his future. So well done on that side. And then sort of mentally, I guess, abdicated responsibility for that for the next, you know, 15 years?
Yeah.
And that's the part that interests me. It's a bit, you know, I'm trying to think of analogies because it's a bit like going to a doctor and the doctor says, look, you might be prone to high blood pressure. So you know, eat properly and do a bit of exercise. And then the doctor phones you a year later and says, look, let's just come in for a checkup. Let's just check, you know, let's see what you're doing. And you don't pitch up for the appointment and then you kind of just carry on.
So in the financial advisor's defense, I mean, there is evidence here that they did make contact and they did.
You
know,
for a period of time.
But for some reason, that communication stopped. In 2012, from 2005, our records indicate that our training director was in contact with you at least once or twice every year until 2012. There's no evidence of any replies to those emails or a request from you for additional financial advice. And again, this is this particular financial advisor covering themselves. So they've got a good record system that says you've not been responsive to us. So we know that we spoke to you until 2012. But in 2012, they stopped trying. Now, what is the responsibility of the financial advisor? Does the financial advisor keep having to shout down into the empty drain at somebody who's not responding to them? Because it seems unreasonable if I keep phoning you and you don't phone me back. At some point, I get bored.
Well, my view there is there's going to be a legal responsibility and then there's the ethics and the morals of this. And so on all counts, the advisor is obliged to make contact with their client once a year and to try and do a review with that client of what's going on with their with the investments, and actually then try and do the broader mandate in terms of saying, you know, you've got this one thing, but you know, like, what's going on in the rest of your life, and you know, are you doing adequate provision for whatever's going on with your whole financial position? Are you now married and have you got kids and whatever the deal is? And so I mean, and the advisor is kind of owning up to the fact that that they haven't done that since 2012. So in my view, if I'm trying to contact someone and I'm trying to deal with them and they are a client of mine and they're not engaging, then what I do is I write an email to them, hoping that I guess you would expect the email would bounce back if the email address didn't exist anymore. But I'd be writing to them and to the product provider to say, I'm no longer this person's advisor. I'm resigning because I have a duty of care that I can't now exercise, and therefore I can't be the advisor, and I can't be paid on an ongoing basis to do a job I can no longer do. And that's the part that's worrying me here, is kind of post 2005, 2006, you know, where the relationship just goes to one-sided, where the person's just sending emails, the advisor's sending emails. That's the part I don't like, should have resigned.
But the direct deposit is going in. They are making an effort to make contact, and the client is not responding. But the direct deposit is still coming out of a bank account and is still being paid in. So the account is still active. This person is still alive. They're still paying the money. And this advisor is still taking a fee. This advisor, even though they're not communicating, is still taking a fee. And beyond 2012, when they stop communicating with the client, they're still taking a fee.
Yeah, and I think just to understand how those fees would work, so this advisor would have got the bulk of his money right up front. So in the first year, he would have got the most money, and in the second year, the biggest kind of kick-on commission, second-year commission, I think it's called.
In 2004, this particular advisor got fees of 9,450 rand. In 2005, they got another 4,000 rand. In total, they've received over 30,000 rand in fees. So they got half the fees in the first 2 years, yep. And the next 13 years, they've got another 15 or so thousand.
And so what actually happens is the way these insurance companies work is that every time there's that 10% escalation, it's kind of like a mini new contract. So they're getting kind of, let's just say kind of an upfront commission on a mini new contract of 10% escalation on the previous year. So that's why those are happening. And so that's actually kind of a new engagement every time with this client, new relationship almost. And that's the part I don't like, is there that advisor should have said, listen, I'm not exercising any kind of duty of care here. There is no relationship, and I need to get out of this. I need to exit stage left, and this person is clearly not engaging with me. I'm not providing a service anymore. So the advisor also, it feels to me like both parties kind of did the fire and forget. You know, I'm going to do this RA investment up front. You know, I've got it as the client. Advisor says, great, I've got my big commissions up front. And for the rest, I'm going to send a perfunctory email. Is that a good word?
Yes, it is. And then, but the perfunctory email stopped as well. And they admit it.
And that's indefensible. So yeah. I would guess that if the FASE ombuds listening to this, they're going to say to themselves, hang on, you know, this person's getting a commission. They've got a relationship with this client, and they have not, and they're owning it straight away. Yeah. They're owning the fact that they haven't done their job. And now it's in terms of the law. It's not just morals and ethics anymore. Now the FASE Act obliges, the Financial Advisory Intermediary Services Act, just to give the whole deal, actually obliges advisors to engage with their clients.
So the advisor here has failed.
Yeah.
Okay. And they could have got out of it by going to this product provider and saying, we can't service this client anymore, please stop charging them, I can't take a fee for this anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
But just there, because we've got to stop for 1 second. I've tried to do that before. And then you get no response from the insurance companies. And then what happens is next year you look at it again, and there you are. You're still the advisor, and you go back to the insurance company, and now you keep records, right? Because now you go to your compliance office and say, look, I've done this. Here it is. You know, I've tried to get out of this. And then you write another request to the insurance company. You say, please get rid of me. I'm not the advisor here. Some insurance companies do what they do is they put it into an orphan pot of clients, and they'll try and service the client. But others, their systems are so bad.
Oh. So but you know what? This isn't even the worst bit.
Okay.
I haven't got to the bad bit yet. Okay. So the financial advisor here has failed, and we'll get to the offer that they're making to this guy to settle this matter. What offends me more than anything else is that a total of 400,000 rand has been invested, and that money has grown over 15 years by about 50% to 573,000 rand. Okay? About. Yeah. The insurer has charged 80,000 rand in fees over this time. So not only have they paid fees, paid 30,000 rand in commissions to the insurance to the financial advisor, but the insurance company has charged 80,000 rand in management fees for a fund that has underperformed the index dramatically.
Yeah, and then just to upset you further, that I don't think that's all the revenue that the insurance companies earned, because they would have earned...
Why are you upsetting me? Don't upset me.
They would have also earned a fund management cost, because the money's then invested. So what's been disclosed there, I think, would be the administration charges. But in addition, there will be, and it'll probably be about 1.5% of the value of that 573,000 today would be kind of a fund management charge, because they're not, I can promise you, they're not managing the money for free. You know, they're doing administration, that's disclosed, that charge, but there'll be a further charge on this thing. And usually you can see it, if you're a client, you would see something called a reduction in yield. That will be where you actually see all your costs.
Because I begin to see now, if you've invested 396,000 and there are at least 110,000 rand in fees over the period of time, you've actually only invested 286,000 rand. And that 286,000 rand now is worth 573,000. So you've doubled your money that's been invested in your behalf. But a huge proportion of the money that you are putting away for your old age, a big chunk, a huge chunk of money, out of the money you've invested, about a quarter has gone to fees.
Yeah. And and what's interesting about, well, not interesting, but what's depressing about this was if either party, either the advisor or the client had woken up to this, probably, let's say in 2012 or 2010, and said, hang on, you know, this thing's really, like, it's really not going somewhere. Is there no better alternative? Because at that time, they probably would have had to pay a penalty of about 25% if they'd said, you know what, I'm out of here. I'm going to move it to a unit trust company, RA.
So now I've got no written evidence of what it will cost this individual to get out of this product, but he tells me that he's been told it'll cost him at least 70,000 rand to get out of it. So now you take your grand total that you've got here of 573, you give them 70, so you get 500. So you've invested 400 over time, and you'll get 500.
If they transfer now. And so there is another hint in this thing is if I'm the client, I go to the insurance company's ombud first. Now that's what I would be doing now, and to say, you know what? Here's all the evidence. The advisor's owning to the fact that they haven't given me any advice or any service since 2012, and I've had no luck here. What I want you to do is transfer me to another RA and don't charge me the penalty. That I would be doing straight away.
Because it is a sucky investment product. They are charging massive fees. The performance is poor. And if they pay the penalty in order to get out, they get 100,000 rand more than they've put in.
Yeah.
Over this period of time.
So then they're getting drilled.
You are being screwed over properly in this environment. Okay, but here's the financial advisor's solution. The financial advisor says, your complaints suggest that I'm entitled to the 2004 and 2005 fees. I don't think his complaints suggest that at all, but this is the financial advisor, and not entitled to the whole 30,000 paid to me over the last 13 years. So I'd like you to be happy, so I'll split the 30,000 with you, and I'll pay either into a retirement annuity or into a new tax-free investment account. That seems like, oh, you're being so nice and reasonable.
But this I want you to be happy.
But this is a guy who's broken the law by not servicing his client.
Yeah, he's in breach of the Phase Act. Yeah.
So therefore, actually, this is a fight worth having, going back to the insurance ombud and saying, I'm dissatisfied with this set of circumstances. I need to be able to transfer this product out of this and into another retirement annuity. And you need to force this particular product provider, who's got me shackled to rubbish performance and continues to gouge fees out of me at a hell of a rate. About 15% of the value of this portfolio has been paid out in fees. It's criminal.
So my suggestion always in this instance is just to understand the process here. So if you don't want to deal with the advisor, let's just say you're really irritated in this instance, justifiably really irritated with the advisor, then the first step would be to go to the insurance company's, so in this insurance company, XYZ's, their own ombud. Because usually what they do is they actually appoint a pretty strong independent person who's got a good legal background and often a very good insurance background, and approach that ombud first and say, this is the deal, here's all the correspondence. I'm not happy. You need to help me out. This is what I want to do. And I feel that often there would be quite a good response. It would be quite quick to get this resolved.
So you can go back to the insurance company, even though you've gone to the long-term insurance ombud. You've sort of skipped a whole bunch of processes. You've gone straight to the long-term insurance ombud to complain. You can go back to this particular company and say, are you guys willing to help me out?
Let's fix this. This is not a great situation. It's not a reflection on them. It's not a good reflection on anybody in this deal. And often they'll be more reasonable in this. And that ombud is not, that's not an employee of that company. So that ombud is kind of being paid a fee to stand there and stand judgment first.
And where do they move the money to?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, that move it to a unit trust company's RA would always be my advice, because there the fees, number one, are incredibly transparent. You actually see every single month what your fees are. And if you decide for whatever reason to stop contributing because you get retrenched or whatever, there's no penalty. And if you then just leave that RA until you're age 55, then you're not being penalized the value of your fund. Yes, you're paying an administration fee and a fund fee, but that's the deal to me, is that this should be in a unit trust RA.
Okay, so don't accept the financial advisor's deal, or do you? Do you take the 15 grand from them and ask them to top it into your RA, then go to the insurance company and saying, you guys have screwed me over with rubbish performance, set me free. If you love me, set me free. If I'm truly yours, I'll come back to you. I won't, but...
I mean, my thing is, I wouldn't take a deal now. I wouldn't take that deal now, because I think that might be some kind of a full and final settlement or something like that. And I would be fighting this with the insurance company first, because I suspect the phase ombud's going to say, have you gone through a process? Have you...
I mean, it stresses a really important couple of points, just to wrap up. You have a responsibility to your future self to ensure that when you buy a product, you buy the correct product and that you get the right advice to buy the right product. And I know it's confusing and it's hard, but you also have a responsibility to keep an eye on it, to force the hand of the advisor, to push hard on the advisor when you believe they're gouging fees and they're not giving you the service, to nail them swiftly and quickly, not wait 15 years to look for, because actually, if he dealt with this 10 years ago, he could have been in a different RA environment altogether, and could have, this money could actually be worth $1 million with proper management, rather than this paltry amount of money that it is now.
Yeah, 100%.
Take responsibility for yourself.
Bad situation.
Lots of failures, but ultimately we side on the side of the client in this particular case, because the I's have not been dotted and the T's crossed.
Yeah, and I mean, you, as an advisor, I mean, surely this is a heck of a lesson. Don't just take thousands of clients, charge them big upfront fees, and accumulate a nice big base and brag about how many thousands of clients you've got.
Isn't that where it works?
I mean, that's bad. This is not my industry. This is the history of my industry, of bad people doing bad stuff.
Warren Ingram, Galileo Capital. I hope those are good lessons learned.
The Money Show. Small business.
So this is not what we were planning to talk about, but I've taken over and I've decided that this is what we're going to talk about, because Pavlo Fotidis, I thought he was a smart guy. And when we're told consistently that writing a book is not a great business decision, because you don't make money out of writing books. You might make money out of speaking about books or your book, or if you've changed the world, if you're Jim Collins, you become terribly famous and everyone around the world reads your book. But if you're Pavlo Fotidis from Auric Business Accelerator and you are looking as if you've lost sleep and that you are actually quite grumpier than normal, it means that you've written a book. And this is what it sounds like. And what Pavlo's got a problem now, because he's written this manuscript. He's delivered the manuscript to his publishers, and they said, that's very nice, Pavlo. And he has some of the world's worst ideas for a book title, and they've given him some terrible ideas for a book title. So I've decided what we're going to do tonight, and with your help, please, is we are going to get Pavlo to do a 30-second elevator pitch. You know how he's tortured you over the years with these elevator pitches. And he has told you that this is how you need to work an elevator pitch. And so he's going to do an elevator pitch on this book. So by the end of 30 seconds, which I'm going to time and police like a person who is a proper policeman, and he's getting only 30 seconds, he's going to pitch the book to you. And you are then, we're crowdsourcing book titles. And he's even agreed, not that he hasn't agreed, but on the back of the book, he'll say, and thanks to Mom for the book title. So you need your creative juices going. 31702-31567. In the next 20 minutes, I want a book title out of you, please. All right? because I can't come up with a book title either. I may have an idea. Some of you may spark, because I haven't heard the elevator pitch, because we've just come up with this idea. Or you can tweet me, at Bruce Business. Pavlo Fotidis, you have 30 seconds. Are you ready? You look quite scared. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I'm okay. Let's give it a go.
All right. You've got 30 seconds starting now. Elevator pitch, go.
94.6% of businesses started fail to sell, Bruce. They close at tremendous cost to the business owner, the family, the people employed, and the society within which they operated. I thought that there was a reason for this, and there was. We are not taught how to build businesses. We're not given insights on how to build businesses practically, realistically. This book gives the secret sauce on how to take a good business, double its size, treble its size, and ensure that down the line, you eventually turn it into greatest wealth-producing asset and get it sold.
Okay, listen, your elevator, you went to about 35 seconds. So one, you cheated and you broke your own rules. Okay, I've come up with a book title for you.
You have?
Okay, The Secret Sauce, How to Build and Grow a Business in South Africa. That's my pitch. Because you used the term secret sauce. And I think that's quite good, but that's my pitch to you. My question to you, dear listener this evening on the wireless, is you've heard Pablo's book, you've listened to Pablo often enough and long enough to know what his shtick is. And he's written a book, and I've just glanced through it now, and it's a hefty manuscript. It's about 250 pages or thereabouts. He's going to get it published very soon. And if you don't help us, it's going to come with a really bad title.
Terrible title. I'm so stuck, Bruce. You know, when you're so close to something and you've poured so much into it. And also, this book is not a normal business book. It's a dramatized stories. It's a series of stories of very, very real people who reflect the everyday lives of every business all the business people that I work with. So firstly, I mean, the book needs to be credited to all the businesses we've worked with and all the insights we've gained and gleaned and shared with them.
Oscars, but yeah, carry on.
But it's a title, from what I understand, a title needs to only have three or four words. That's the challenge. It's not simple.
Yeah, but most business books, because they are quite complex, do get away with it. Like Bling, 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 How to Grow Your Business and Become Super Rich in 20 Days. You know, so they've got a main title and then they've got a little subtitle. So we can work with this. I mean, we will bully your publishers into doing this. Have you found it an exhausting process?
It's, well, the first manuscript I wrote over 6 days nonstop, and it was a 75,000 word sentence, one sentence. It was a moment of complete inspiration. It began when I was in New York at 3 o'clock in the morning, suffering from jet lag, unable to sleep. I wrote and I didn't stop until the 70,000 words were written. Then the process of organizing the thoughts and putting it into simple, easy, digestible sequences and dramatizing the text to make it readable and to create the characters inside the book. Yeah, that took a bit of time. It certainly did take a bit of time.
Okay, he's lost sleep. It's like having a third child. So, Pavlo Fotidis, we need a book title. Mine is The Secret Sauce, How to Grow a Business in South Africa, or How to Grow a Business in Africa, or How to Grow a Business into an Asset of Value. You see, I knew you'd like that. 31702, 31567. You got 15 minutes to come up with a book title. Otherwise, we're going with my title, and I'm sure you can do better than I. At Bruce Business on Twitter. Book titles, please. Pablo Fotidis' new book. We cannot let this book be published with the titles the publishers have suggested. Not allowed.
The Money Show.
Small business.
Okay. We're taking your calls. Here's Pablo's topic. All right, here's Pablo's topic. I know you've worked hard on it, but no. This is more important. We need to save you from yourself and your publishers. Book titles, please. Russ in Cape Town, what is your title suggestion for Pablo?
My title suggestion is Now You Do.
Now You Do. Emphasis on you.
Precisely because the question is I don't know how or I would like to. And after reading the book, Now You Do. So it's Now You Do, Now You Don't, but Now You Do. So you can keep the explanation for the subtitle, which is, you know, how to grow your business in South Africa, blah, blah, blah. But
yeah,
Now You Do is like a very affirming, it's very focused, it's the three words you're looking for. And I think
Russell, you got something, Now You Do or Now You Do. It's like getting off your butt and actually exercising your idea and putting it into practice.
Yeah.
Precisely. Russ, thank you for that. We're going to put this into a pot. Are you making notes?
I am making notes.
Fatidis is making notes. He's grateful. Gladys in Centurion, what have you got for us?
Do it right, finally.
Thank you, Gladys in Centurion. Tasneem in Randburg.
Hi. So I like your idea, but then I was just thinking the other name is Guide to the Galaxy of Business World in South Africa, somewhere, or Guide to Galaxy, and then How to Do Business in South Africa is like your subtitle.
Like one of the coolest books ever written was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, so you want to play on that. How about The Entrepreneur's Guide to the Business Galaxy?
There you go.
Play with that. We can play with this. Thank you, Tasneem and Randburg. Thank you, everybody. Taking your calls this evening with Pablo's book ideas. A couple coming through on the SMS line this evening. Oh, my goodness me. There are lots of them. Source for thought from Sam. The business source and how to achieve success in South Africa. The secret sauce to cooking up a business by Marcus Huest. No. real deals, success stories you can learn from. Maybe there's something in there. Real. I like the word of use of real, Pablo.
Very nice.
Put real into the business.
Because all the case studies are absolutely solid and real.
Yeah. So real is nice. I think we could fit real in there somewhere. That could be cool. Practical entrepreneurship, fast tracking, sustainable business growth. For a textbook, I would say yes. I mean, that is a good university textbook. If you're doing an MBA, an entrepreneurship MBA, I would say that would be a good title. It's a little dry, I think, from what I see, and it is. I haven't been given a proper copy yet. I'll have to probably pay for one because he's in business. we will have to... I think a bit more loose, a little looser, a little bit more funky and readable.
So you didn't like my titles, Bruce. You didn't like Decoding Business Growth. You didn't like Built for Growth.
Built for Growth is too Jim Collins. I mean, Jim Collins kind of did that 15, 20 years ago. Okay, so he's done that. Jim got that thing. It feels very Jim Collins, which is fine.
You know, there's a title, one of the chapters in
Building
there.
Building an Asset of Value Business. I mean, that's one of your titles. No.
No, that's not the title. That's the project code name per se. There's a chapter in there called Buffett is Buying, because ultimately the real test is whether you can withstand and outcompete Buffett for the price of your business.
Okay, so back to real world and real people, helpful people. real deal, okay. Business Secret Sauce, that's Lenny Naidu. Book title, Bad Country, Good Business. Ooh. No, it's not a bad country. It's had hooligans and lunatics running it on and off for 50 years, but it's not a bad country. The Art of Building Your Business into an Asset of Value. That sounds like Pavlo wrote that. I like this one. I lost sleep and I'm not even get paid for it. That's from Mike.
That is the most truthful title out of all of them.
I lost sleep. Please buy my book. Make me feel better about the life I'm never going to get back. So many coming through. The Art of Building Business. I lost sleep. I think the book title should be called Growing Your Business, Not a Normal Business Book. Justin, you're not a normal business book. I think there's something in there.
There is, actually. There is.
Again, you don't want negativity on the title, but there's something there, Justin. You're onto something. Work on it, Justin. It's not right. Work on it. Come back to us. And then business, how to make it or break it. We want to know how to make it. Pavlo's business model, the business of business, the small book on big profits. The small business book, something like that. The secret of making your business shoot for the stars. Oh, too many words, Vusi in Pretoria. Essay Business, 12 Secret Sources. How Not to Fail in Business. There's something there, Irvin. How Not to Mess It Up. Resourceful. Oh, an Essay Business Tale or Essay Business Tales. Maybe Essay Business Tales you can use. Book title, and it can be translated into all South African languages. Let's Build, or You Build with a U, business in South Africa. Ka-ching! by Pavlo Fatidis. You don't want to know how they spelled your name. Oh, cheating, this one. We'll get back to that one in a moment. Leslie in Greenside, your idea?
Yes, from job to assets.
From jobs to assets, like that's from Steve like Jobs to title. Assets.
Yeah.
From jobs to assets, and then in small letters underneath it, as they do, how to make your business an asset, not just a job.
There's something there. I mean, he's smiling for the first time in weeks. Thank you, Leslie. You know the book by Sam Beck-Bessinger, the personal finance book with the rudest title in the world.
Yes.
Manage Your Money Like a Grown-Up.
Yes.
Okay, so here's one. I quite like this. I really do like this. And I think this, I like this even more than my own, which I've come up with a new one, by the way. Run your business like a grown-up.
I like that.
I'm sorry, but that is bloomin' good. And if you notice, all of the best sellers at the moment in the business section are all ones with rude words in.
They do have a bit of a rude word.
I need to know who you are, the person who sent that one through, please, because you might need to get a credit on a book title. And 95 yourself, how to be the 5% of business that succeed from Copano. Yeah, how to be part of the 5%. There's something there. Survival Guide to Business in South Africa. That's helpful, yeah, because that's what it is. It's a survival guide. Sipo in Pretoria, you've got an idea?
Hi, Bruce, can you hear me?
Oh, clearly.
Great stuff. You're making me do something that I've sworn I'll never do, which is to call into your radio. but anyway, my idea is actually derived from one of the features of your show, which is Shapeshifters. Wealth creation.
Thank you, Sipo. I like the nod to the money show, and thank you for phoning, and I'm glad you did. I'm glad we managed to motivate you to that. Madron in Newlands in Cape Town, your idea? Madron?
Oh, sorry, I didn't... hi. Business inspired. Capital B, little credentials, business techniques for successful business evolution.
Thank you, Madron, in Newlands. A blueprint for exponential business success. Exponential is a good word to use.
Mm.
Building a lasting legacy, that's my suggestion for the book title. Building a lasting legacy, that's nice. Improve the value of your business, that's Martin. How to turn your business into a saleable asset, that's Martin again. Lessons from the business front lines, I quite like that one. Lessons from the business trench, lessons from the business dead zone. They are fabulous, fabulous, fabulous ideas, Pablo. If you don't have more to work with now than when we started out this evening, then we have failed you. And then a couple from my Twitter feed, let's do this, running business successfully. The golden rules, building a successful business in South Africa. You're not setting out rules, though. These are guidelines and case studies and lessons. You can't make rules because you can't make rules for success.
No, you can't. You can't.
But thank you, Suhail. Thank you.
Yeah, but it's actually quite nice because there's a very particular, there's an approach, a consistent approach that works.
Bohaka Cindy, don't do it! The real source of entrepreneurship. The secret recipe to scaling your business in South Africa. That's a lot of titles. I mean, what do you... Why Businesses Fail, Pavlo's Secret Sauce to Success. Book title, To Master the Business Succession in South Africa. Lots of lovely ideas and some nice threads and themes that you can build on.
Very nice.
From ass to asset. From Melanie and Cape Town. Your master book... That's for the Cape Town edition. Can I make one final pitch for consideration?
I'm all ears.
Okay.
I'm desperately all ears.
Okay. I'm thinking of a global reach for your book, mm-hmm. actually. So I'm thinking Business Boost Without Bulldust, not another business book. The Real Formula, Secret Sauce to Business by Pavlo Fatidis. From the Horse's Mouth, Buy Low, Sell High. That's shares. Survival Guide to Business in South Africa. They're fine. We've gone through all of them. I would go with Sorcery S-A-U-C-E-R-Y, Growing in a World with No Growth.
Oh, that's very nice, because I think
The look in your face said, I better say something nice about this.
No, it's very... But you know why I think it's a very nice title? It's because that's the reality we're going to face for the next 5 to 10 years.
Sorcery. The secret sauce. Sorcery. So play on sauce. Anyway, one last one. We can be in trouble. Oh, no, we've run out of time. Quickly, Sean in Midrand.
Hi, Bruce.
Quickly, Sean, Midrand.
Okay, quickly. Okay, so it's called the secret sauce, but you've got a picture of a bottle that's pouring out sauce, but the sauce is actually not, it's the rand sign, the dollar sign, whatever monetary amount.
Oh, I like sauce, yes.
A mind, because recipe to success, it kind of all adds up.
I like it.
So the title would be The Secret Sauce, and just a bottle pouring out those icons.
Wonderful.
Oh, very nice.
Sean in Midrand, thank you very much indeed. Karabo and I, we're waving at each other because I'm distracted and engaged. Do we have any more ads? We don't have any. We can carry on talking about book titles. Excellent. Okay, so we've played a lot
nice
on sauce.
Picture that. Huh? Nice
it's a,
picture.
It's a lovely image. It's a lovely image. I would use that image with sorcery, growing in a world with no growth. That's just me. I'm pitching my idea because I think it's quite special. I also did like Manage Your Business Like a Grown-Up.
Very nice ideas.
And I liked elements of everything.
Thank you all very, very much. There are, how many do we have over there? There are quite a few to go through.
There must be 50 titles. I missed a couple too. They're just too many. I love this. Thank you, everybody. I mean, I get quite emotional.
So do I. Thank you so much.
Because you guys are great, and you are, Pavla helps you.
Thank you so much.
But you help people every day. I mean, every week you come in here and you give us your time. And I hate the invoice one day. But he hasn't sent one yet in many, many years. This is payback for Pavla. But yes, there are some really strong ideas. The publishers are going to hate them all. And that's good, because we need to shake up the publishers, frankly. But yeah, you've got about 50 ideas here.
Thank you so much.
Even you should be able to do something with those.
I certainly will. Thank you so much. And thank you for everyone who made the effort. I really, really appreciate it.
Last word to you, Jane in Parkview.
Hi, to the next level.
Thank you. From first floor to the next level. Thank you, Jane in Parkview. There's another one for you. Write it down.
I've got it.
Excellent. Oh, he writes it. Make it. How to build your business. That's nice. Rust to gold. Maybe. Yeah, lots of playing. I'm sorry I actually mentioned sauce in the beginning, because lots of people have stolen my sauce idea. Pavla Fadidis, I hope you get a great book title out of everybody's contributions. We have crowdfunded, we hope, a great title for Pavla's book. And now, as payment for that, you all have to go and buy it when it's published. Pavla Fadidis, Auric Business Accelerated, absolutely nothing tonight. You did all the work, and what a pleasure it was. Good night.